You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And today's show is brought to you by Pepsi. This football season, of course, it's been different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you've been watching this season. Personally, I've been enjoying the living room experience. It's a little bit lower stress than going out to a bar or something like that, but however you've been watching, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid who copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. And today we are going to preview the Cowboys, or whatever's left of the Cowboys, because it's been a rough season for them, of course, as Marcus Mosher spoke so long to us about on yesterday's show. We also talked to Orlando Scandrick yesterday, which was really fun. Got a one-on-one with him, got some of his thoughts, especially his perspective being on a team like the Vikings. It's kind of, you know, started off rough and is surging. You know, how do you learn how to win? All that stuff. So go listen to that for a more general take. I've got a couple of things that the Cowboys do that I really want to hone in on today. But before we get into any of that, there's a little bit of news we got to get into. On Thursday, the Vikings put CJ Ham on the COVID IR list. So he has missed a whole bunch of practices both this week and last week with a shoulder injury sometimes, but now it's not even the shoulder injury, with quote unquote not injury related. And that could be anything, right? That could be a protocol thing, a COVID protocol thing. That could be that he just had something else to do. It would be listed as like personal reasons if he had like a family obligation or something like that. But that could basically, usually when you see not injury related, it's something else was going on that we probably don't need to care about. Then he goes on the COVID IR list, which is really interesting because he was missing practice for that non-injury related reason. They didn't list it as illness, and he played in the Chicago game. So it's very strange. Like, a lot of people are speculating that not injury related thing was he had like COVID symptoms or some sort of COVID exposure or something like that. My guess is that there was at some point a COVID protocol broken and he had to be held out of practice, not so much that he had to be put on COVID IR, but where the Vikings as a precaution were holding him out of practice and out of the facility and stuff like that. And then sure enough, he tests positive. That's going to be like my guess. But either way, the Vikings probably going to be without CJ Ham in this game, which means we might see fullback Jake Bargis. We might see a fullback like Irv Smith or something like that. And of course, the Vikings are also dealing with, on the injury report, all the same injuries that they had on yesterday's injury report, except Garrett Bradbury was limited with a shoulder injury. He was upgraded to full participation, so he should be good to go for the game. Cameron Dantzler, still a limited participant. That's good to see with the concussion protocol. You don't want to see him regress, right? Ezra Cleveland, still a DNP with an ankle injury, which means that Brett Jones and Oli Udoh were splitting reps as the right guard. So we don't know which one of those we're going to get, but that's going to be who plays right guard. That's really interesting. Oli Udoh has been kind of a buzzing idea, kind of a background noise thing when people say, well, what if Oli Udoh moved to guard, right? Because he's looked pretty good at tackle when he's gone in, but obviously there's no place for him at tackle. They're not going to replace Riley Reiff or Brian O'Neill, both of whom are having decent seasons. So hey, what if we got him in at guard? What if we kicked him inside, got him in at guard? I never thought that would be a great fit. And I think the Vikings agree with me because they put in Drew Samia over him. They put in Ezra Cleveland before he was ready over him. And now they're even considering putting in Brett Jones over him, who they didn't even find rosterable. So I think the Vikings agree with me on that. You also have Irv Smith and Hercules Mata'afa limited with groin and ankle injuries, respectively. We'll see if they end up good to go in this one. On the Cowboys side of things, this is where it gets very interesting. So there's one of their centers, Tyler Badaz, has a hamstring injury. He hasn't practiced all week. Randy Gregory has an illness and he hasn't practiced all week. And on Thursday, DeMarcus Lawrence appeared on the injury report with an illness. They asked Mike McCarthy if they thought Randy Gregory's illness was COVID related. He said he didn't think it was, but he didn't say for sure. He was like, no, I don't think so. And then later that day, DeMarcus Lawrence shows up on the injury report with an illness. That's very, very interesting to me. And we'll see if that persists. It's definitely going to be a situation to watch, because as we're going to kind of get into, the Cowboys defense is decimated by either injuries or departures or just people underperforming. So DeMarcus Lawrence has been one of the only bright spots on that defense. If he can't go, things get really, really bleak for Dallas on the defensive side of the ball. But let's talk about these Cowboys, and I actually want to start on the offensive side of the ball. I want to start by talking a little bit about Andy Dalton. So Andy Dalton's going to play quarterback for them. He's out of the COVID protocol. He's still listed on the injury report with a concussion, but he's been a full participant all week, so he'll probably play. And Andy Dalton, we have a lot of information on Andy Dalton. Of course, he started for so many years in Cincinnati. And I think the move with Andy Dalton is blitz the absolute hell out of him. He crumbles under pressure, and he doesn't punish blitzes, though there are some quarterbacks you cannot blitz. You can't blitz Drew Brees, right? Because he's smart enough where he will find where you blitz from. He'll attack that spot of the field. He'll figure out pre-snap. He'll call hot routes and stuff. Aaron Rodgers, kind of the same thing, or at least this year. He's been kind of 50-50 on that, I think. There are just some quarterbacks you don't blitz. Andy Dalton is not one of those quarterbacks. He dissolves under pressure, and it doesn't matter if you have to blitz to get that pressure. Go get that pressure. The thing is, most quarterbacks have a way of countering the blitz. Either they're smart enough to like punish you, or they're the kind of quarterback like what Aaron Rodgers does or what like Russell Wilson does, where they'll escape the pocket, they'll either scramble, or they'll extend the play, get schoolyard on you. There are some quarterbacks that will just like do a throwaway, like Aaron Rodgers has been this quarterback sometimes where he'll just throw it away, like Sam Bradford did. Teddy was that. Sometimes they'll just take the sack. Sometimes Kirk Cousins is that when he's at his worst. You know, he'll just crumble and take the sack and say, well, I'm not going to do something dumb. Andy Dalton will try to force the play anyways. He really, really, really doesn't want to let pressure affect the play. He wants to be able to overcome the pressure, but he's not good enough at it. So he just kind of forces the ball anyways. And that's going to force off platform weird throws and a lot of really interceptable throws, really inaccurate throws at the very the worst, like incompletions, right? And at the best, an interception. He has not been able to make those plays. So generating pressure on Andy Dalton, even if you have to sacrifice coverage to do so via blitzing, is a really, really good idea. And the Vikings have been pretty lockstep on this. You know, when quarterbacks have played poorly versus the blitz lately, then, you know, they're going to blitz them. And when they've played well versus the blitz, you'll come out of the game going, whoa, why didn't Mike Zimmer blitz at all? And it's like, oh, because it was Drew Brees, and you kind of shouldn't. And honestly, I think that's the key to taking advantage of Andy Dalton. His average depth of target has been really, really conservative as well. This is not a deep, high-flying offense. This isn't the Seahawks where we worry about these go balls. So this cover two thing the Vikings have been doing actually works really, really well against what Andy Dalton offenses have been, and specifically what the Cowboys have been in the couple of games that they had mostly Andy Dalton. And I think the other thing I really want to talk about with the Cowboys is Ezekiel Elliott. He's not very good. And I know that seems weird if you are somebody who, I mean, if you had Zeke in fantasy, maybe you're onto what I'm talking about. But if you haven't been paying attention, you're, wait, I thought Zeke was like one of the best, feed Zeke, that whole thing, what happened to all that? He's just like bad, man. What do you want from a running back, right? You want him to not fumble. You want him to force missed tackles. You want him to get yards after contact, right? That's what kind of separates good running backs from bad running backs. And Zeke does none of those things. He's had a horrendous fumbling issue. He forces fewer missed tackles than like Alexander Mattison. Like on a per snap basis, he is well behind Alexander Mattison in terms of breaking tackles. And we don't think of Alexander Mattison as a tackle breaker. And the same goes for like yards after contact and stuff. Honestly, this is a take that I've had on Locked On NFL. You can find me every Tuesday on the Locked On NFL podcast. And I've been propagating the take: Zeke sucks and the Cowboys should bench him for Tony Pollard. Unironically, I think Tony Pollard is better for the Cowboys offense, and I think they're better with Tony Pollard. They'll never do it because Zeke has too much name value and NFL teams work that way. But that is, I think Dallas is just better with Tony Pollard. I'm more afraid of Tony Pollard in this game than I am of Ezekiel Elliott. Now, the Vikings specifically have kind of struggled with power backs like Ezekiel Elliott, you know, Jonathan Taylor and, you know, these kind of powerful running games. So I could see Zeke having a better game than usual against these Vikings, but I'm still not afraid of Ezekiel Elliott, like, making big plays. And eventually the Cowboys are going to have to find a way to make big plays. And right now, with Andy Dalton and Ezekiel Elliott, I struggle to see what the source of those will be unless it is blown Vikings coverages. So to have success on defense in this game, the Vikings just have to not blow coverages. That has been difficult for them, and I can't guarantee that it's going to happen, but if ever there were a team that the Vikings could shut down, this is the team. or I guess the Bears too, but I digress. I really actually want to talk about their defense a little more. And I also have your bold predictions. You guys sent me some spicy predictions, some spicy takes. So I'm going to go into those. We'll also go over the bold predictions from last week, see if anybody got close. And spoiler alert, some of you did. But hey, this whole season has been a lot different. And Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you've been watching this season. Whether you were watching for draft picks and you're rooting against the Vikings every time, I'm not there with you. But, I've been rooting for the comeback, right? Rooting for them to rattle off six straight wins. Imagine a 6-game winning streak and they're 7-5 and they're back in this. And then this would be a much more fun season to cover, right? But however you've been watching, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So the Cowboys defense is underperforming its talent level. That's a nice way to put it. Listen, they have players that were supposed to be awesome. I mean, we were so excited about Jalen Smith coming in and playing well. We were excited about Leighton Vander Esch, who's been up and down. That defense, I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence has been DeMarcus Lawrence, and Randy Gregory's been fine, but they had like Alden Smith and Everson Griffin and all these cool rotational pieces, not to mention, exciting new rookie Trevon Diggs. Jordan Lewis had played well, and the whole thing has just fallen apart. And so I'm really fascinated by this. And I think one of the things that really fell apart with the Cowboys is their play calling has been very, very predictable. Eric Eager, noted Vikings and Chiefs fan and Pro Football Focus analytics guy, did a really cool project where he tried to kind of assess the predictability of defenses by looking at their coverage shells and how often they've mixed those up and how often they included blitzes and other various things. I'll link it in the show notes. And he found that in 2020, the fourth most predictable defense was the Dallas Cowboys. And that, so I went in to look at some film of them for this, and I kind of found the same thing. I charted their entire game against the Browns. The reason I chose the Browns is because of Kevin Stefanski. Kevin Stefanski put up 49 on these Cowboys. So, okay, how do I look at, this is going to tell me everything, right? And I found that they basically always run single high shells. They ran a few two high shells. And the difference between those is the difference between middle of the field open and middle field close. So now I'm going to kind of go into a little bit of a 101 thing about beating certain coverage shells and kind of the basics of how to attack certain different coverages, kind of the game of cat and mouse that goes on with coaches. And just know that what I'm about to say is super basic. Everybody in the NFL adds a million wrinkles onto this and blitzes and different exploits and stuff like that. So it's never this simple, but this is a good 101. So the Cowboys, like a whole bunch of teams, basically the entire NFL for the 5 years after the Seahawks won the Super Bowl, have been running cover three as their main shell. That's what Pete Carroll did. Everybody wanted to copy the Legion of Boom. Makes sense, right? And the way that offenses have kind of learned to attack cover three, and the Cowboys have been one of the last teams to move off this. Mike Zimmer moved off this in 2018. A lot of teams have now followed, but the Cowboys haven't really moved off this. They still like to run a lot of cover three. And in a wide zone scheme, like what Stefanski brought to Cleveland, what Kubiak has here, there are a couple of counters to cover three. There's a lot of cover three counters. There's a couple of counters to cover three that I want to focus on today. The first one is triangle reads. I've described these on the show before, but let's talk about them a little bit because think about cover three. And I wrote an article about this at Zone Coverage that you can keep an eye out for if you go to that. That's got visuals and stuff. But imagine cover three. You've got your three deep defenders, right? Three players all dividing the deep routes, left, middle, and right. And then you have four coverage defenders left over if you're rushing four, right? And those players will split the middle two linebackers. This is your Barr and Kendricks, right? Or I guess Eric Wilson and Kendricks will split the kind of middle part of the field in half. And then the two flats will be covered by the other two underneath defenders. A lot of times this is the cornerback. A lot of times this is like the slot corner, or this is like another linebacker or something like that. So there's cover three, right? And what you find out is that to look at a sideline, you have your deep defender and you have your flat defender, but you don't have anybody in the middle and you only have two guys on that sideline. So if you send three over to that sideline, then suddenly you can get a mismatch. You can get them outnumbered somehow. You can put a lot of stress on those guys. That's called a flood concept. A flood will send three or four players to one sideline. You just run all the routes on one side of the field. Somebody will be open. most of the time when you're watching a bootleg or play action and stuff, it's this flood concept, and it's a great cover three counter, and the Browns absolutely gashed the Cowboys on this. And the and then the triangle read, so that's not a triangle read. The triangle read is, if you think about those two middle defenders, those two that are kind of splitting the left middle and the right middle, there's probably going to be some space in between them. So what you do is you have a guy run directly to that middle, and they'll just say, you know, hey, look at the two linebackers, run your route in between them. And if those two linebackers kind of collapse inside to cover the middle guy, a lot of times this has been Kyle Rudolph or Irv Smith for the Vikings, and if they, you know, crash down and collapse in on Kyle Rudolph, then that means that on their side of the field, there's only going to be two people on that sideline. And so if you have like a high-low that stresses that other defender, that flat defender, so you'll usually have like Dalvin Cook who's running like a swing pass kind of thing, and then you'll have somebody else run like a quick out, you know, 9 yard out or something like that. Well, that curl flat defender is going to have to make a choice. Do they kind of come up, suck up to Dalvin Cook and make sure they can make that tackle? Or do they drop back and make sure you can't get that 9 yard out? They can't do both. And so you can basically read that guy. If he starts to kind of creep back a little bit, then Dalvin Cook's going to be, you know, you can get him the ball with a ton of space to work. That's great. If he starts to come up on Dalvin Cook, then there's probably going to be some space to throw that out. So that's generally a triangle read. Kirk Cousins is very good at that, at those reads. He can kind of read both linebackers at the same time. If one linebacker kind of collapses in and the other one doesn't, he knows to move his progression to that side of the field. If they both go in, he'll probably have a predetermined idea of like, if it's all the same, I'll go to this side. And the Vikings have generally been really good, dating back to last year at least, have been really, really good against these single high, middle of the field closed looks. These looks with one safety in the middle of the field, so like a deep post can't win, but a bunch of other stuff can. The Vikings and Kirk Cousins have been very, very good against that particular style of coverage. So again, this matches up very, very well with the Vikings. And the other thing is that deep defender a lot of times is taking man coverage against somebody, and you're just ending up with a one-on-one Justin Jefferson versus like Jordan Lewis, and they don't have the corners to run all this single high stuff, but they're still doing it because I don't think they just have that many, they just don't like running, you know, cover two and stuff, and they don't feel as much like protecting their corners. They were doing it a little bit more against Pittsburgh, which is the last game they played in there, and now they're coming off a bye, so they might have figured this out, but they don't really have a lot of great corner power, so they probably should have been doing like what the Vikings have been doing and passing all the deep stuff off to their better safeties, but they haven't really been doing that. And in the run game, which is where, you know, the Browns put up 300 rush yards on them with like six different rushers. And I think the real culprit there is A, their defensive line just hasn't been particularly disruptive. Guards have been able to kind of hold them and, you know, move them where they want to be and, you know, get to the second level. And their backers have been very, very slow to process. Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch have been playing youthfully, I guess. They've been kind of letting things come to them. And in a zone run scheme, that's exactly what a climbing guard wants. If Dakota Dozier wants to get up to the second level and get to a linebacker, the exact thing he thinks is ideal is if you sit there and read the play and let him come up and smash you. That's kind of been what the Cowboys have been doing. So that's been a lot of the source of their problems. So this is kind of the second week in a row that I've said this, but if the Vikings play their brand of football and they don't make a whole bunch of dumb mistakes that give away the ball game, they should be able to win this comfortably. But I want to make sure we get to your bold predictions. So in just a second, I'm going to get into all of that and we'll talk about some of your spicy takes. All right, let's hop into the bold prediction. So the first thing we always do is we talk about last week's bold predictions here. The first one came from Wade Corporon, who predicted that the offensive line would give up zero sacks. I said that you had to give up zero pressures to get it, but you didn't get either. There was one sack. It was, I believe, an unblocked sack. I don't know if it actually went, if it was anybody's. No, wait, it was because there was a miscommunication between Garrett Bradbury and Ezra Cleveland. So, yep, they gave up a sack. They gave up a bunch of pressures and stuff. Didn't get there. Brian said that 38-7 horrors haunt Chi-Town. Zimmer throws Nick Foles into superior, exercising the demons, the Vikings. And then he said the Vikings go on to win a Super Bowl after squeaking in as the 16th seed from the NFC somehow. So we didn't get 38-7. It wasn't much of a blowout at all. Stizo said that Madison would get more touchdowns than Cook. I believe they tied because I think the only two touchdown scorers were scored by Adam Thielen. Chris said Kyle Sloter will be strip sacked. You were kind of getting there. So Kyle Sloter was not activated over Tyler Boyd, but Tyler Boyd did get in the game because Nick Foles got injured. So if they had chosen to activate Tyler Boyd instead of, or Kyle Sloter instead of Tyler Boyd, I would have been really, really hyped for you. Mr. Predictable said Boyd's stat line gets 0 for 0 for 0. He was credited with one catch for 10 yards. So I honestly am going to give you that one. That's pretty close. Skeletor said Justin Jefferson goes for 3 touchdowns. Didn't get any touchdowns, but he had a great game. Tyler Forness said Dakota Dozier has a run blocking grade of 70 plus and a pass blocking grade of 40 or less. Dozier actually was 70 plus in both pass and run blocking in that game. He actually was credited with a pretty nice game. So that worked out better than you thought. Ryan Korn said Kirk rushes for over 75 yards and has 2 rushing touchdowns. I don't think Kirk rushed at all in the game. And Kyle Slaby said, nothing weird happens. It's not a house of horrors. We win 20-14 in a boring game. The fact that the Vikings won 19-13, I'm inclined to give this to you, although the idea that nothing weird happens is the game was still pretty cursed. You had the first lost fumble of Kyle Rudolph's 11-year career. You had, or 10-year career. You had Adam Thielen with a case of the drops that never happens to him. And Dalvin Cook took a fumble nutshot and recovered the fumble, but took a nut shot. That is a deeply cursed Soldier Field thing that I think counts here. So I'm not going to quite give it to you, but a few people got like really, really close, which is really exciting because these were plenty bold predictions. But let's move on to the bold predictions for week 11 here. The first one comes from Duke Bangkok, who tried to say that the winning streak ends, that the Vikings would lose the game. I didn't give him that because right now, if you wanted to bet the Cowboys money line, it would be plus 270. That's not even that weird. The Vikings are touchdown favorites, pretty drastic favorites, but touchdown favorites lose plenty in the league. Happens a few times every year. That's not like bold. That's not surprising. It would be an upset, but it wouldn't be that crazy. So he said Cowboys win by 10. And yes, to answer your question, that is bold enough. Michael Schneider says Jefferson gets over the 1,000-yard mark on Sunday. So he would need 238 yards to do that. That would be absolutely insane. But if he goes into, I know Trevon Diggs is hurt. I don't know who's playing for, who's going to play for them. I don't know if we know who's going to play for that for him. But there will be some issues at the cornerback position. And if you can generate some one-on-ones, with which they do let you get, because they play cover one sometimes, they play cover three sometimes. And you know, you can just get a go ball down the sideline and get some one-on-ones with Justin Jefferson, I think you can absolutely pull that off. Lance says, Chad Beebe time, baby. He will go wild versus the Cowboys D for 123 and a touchdown. So I don't need you to keep like the exact stat line right, but yeah, if Chad Beebe goes wild, that would be pretty surprising. He gets more than 6 catches and over 100 yards or anything like that would be pretty insane. Tyler Forness says Mata'afa and Wanham combine for 12 plus pressures. I really like this one. For one, they haven't gotten even close to that. The most they've combined for in a game so far this year has been 8. And so 12 plus would be a pretty crazy game from them, but they're going up against possibly the worst right tackle in the league. Terrence Steele is an undrafted rookie who is starting right now due to injury in Dallas. He has given up 33 pressures. 33 pressures is eyes pop out of your sockets high number. For comparison, think about how bad you think the Vikings offensive line is. The highest pressure allower on the Vikings is Brian O'Neill with 17. Terrence Steele almost doubles him. If you put Terrence Steele, if he didn't play another snap, and you put him on the 2019 Vikings, he would rank second in pressures allowed, next to only Pat Elflein. He allowed more than Riley Reiff. He allowed more than Garrett Bradbury in that season, and he's only played like 7 games, I think. Troy says Kirk Cousins ends up with more rushing yards than Ezekiel Elliott. I love it. We're going to get one of these Kirk Cousins rushing yards ones eventually. And I also love that it exposes Ezekiel Elliott for the fraud that he is. Tanishka says one punt block, one punt return touchdown, 2 missed kicks. I'm not specifying who gets what, though. So that seems plausible. So here's the thing. With the Vikings special teams was, and all the Dan Chisholm stuff we've been talking about, the punt return touchdown, absolutely feasible. The blocked punt, I mean, sure, we've had weird snaps and stuff, and 2 missed kicks, weird snaps and stuff. It's pretty bold to have this many special teams issues, but I don't hate the odds of this one cashing. Wade French's wife says Dallas will run out of quarterbacks, and they'll put Zeke in there. I don't know, is Zeke the guy, does he throw? Is he the guy that, like, throws for them? I thought they had, like, Amari Cooper do that once or twice or something like that. I don't know who their emergency quarterback is, but here's the thing. thing, they're probably only going to activate two for the game. They'll have Andy Dalton, and they'll probably, I would guess it's Garrett Gilbert. They might activate Ben DiNucci. I doubt they dress both for the game. So I could see it if, you know, you get some weird, like, unlucky sacks or something like that, or, you know, somebody takes a big hit or a weird throwing arm thing, or, you know, you could have, like, God forbid, like a non-contact injury or something like that. There's a lot of ways that somebody could get injured in a game. And they probably only dress two quarterbacks. So if they have to go to their emergency quarterback, that'd be crazy. I don't know if it's Zeke, but if you get this one, I mean, that'd be insane. And the last one I am going to go to for the day is that Gladney gets his first pick and scores on it. A few people have said something like this, that Gladney would get his first pick. I really, really like this one. Gladney has not been very aggressive in coverage, and I think that's probably my biggest problem with him, is that he's, I think, a little bit shell-shocked from what happened earlier in the year, and he's been playing things way too far off. And I think a lot of times when you hear Mike Zimmer say stuff like, oh, we gotta ask him to play corner, you know, eventually they gotta go play the position and get out there and play football, and they're getting it more, but they gotta do it more. I think a lot of that is referring to Jeff Gladney, and the way that he's kind of just letting everything happen in front of him right now. And he's just playing too far off. And if you're unfamiliar, Mike Zimmer's scheme gives corners kind of the leeway to orchestrate that themselves, the set of rules. Like, it kind of gives them a flow chart, but it tasks them with the responsibility of making that decision. And so it's Jeff Gladney is playing too far off. It's not that the coaches are instructing him whether or not to play off. They don't have the bandwidth to do that play to play. So it's up to the corners. And he's making the wrong decision, I think, too often. But if he could learn to get a little aggressive, that's easy. You know, that level up could come anytime. Or if, you know, you get Andy Dalton under pressure and he throws a dumb one and you were playing way too far off, but he sailed a pass because his mechanics were all messed up because of pressure, I could totally see Gladney getting a pick six here. That'd be pretty cool to see the rookie get his first pick six. So we're going to be back on Monday. We're going to recap whatever happens in this game, win or lose. I hope I will see you then. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. I will see you all on Monday. And as always, Skull.